Hi, this is David Lohr. I'm a senior engineer at Pixar Animation Studios, and you're listening to the Pixar Podcast.
To infinity and beyond!
So, how long is this going to take?
Squirrel!
You can't rush art.
I never look back, darling. It distracts from the now.
What's the point of going out there? They'll only laugh at me.
A stranger from the outside.
Greetings.
Hello there, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of the Pixar Podcast. This is episode number 116. ThePixarPodcast.com/116 is where you can find the show notes for this episode. I'm your host, Derek Clements. Well, we've come finally to the review episode for Pixar's 15th feature film, Inside Out. That was a track from Michael Giacchino's really terrific score for Inside Out that is available on Soundtrack, and it has great album artwork, so you should check it out. I've been listening to the soundtrack on repeat this week. It's really beautiful stuff, and it serves the film very well. I was really pleased to have this conversation about the film lasting almost like an hour, so strap in, folks. There's a lot we had to talk about with my wonderful co-hosts Davey Morrison Dillard and Maddie Forsyth. They saw the film with me earlier this week, and we had a conversation about it. I brought my recorder to the movie theater, and we just kind of sat there in the mall afterward, wiping away tears and talking about the film. So I hope that you have all seen the film by now. I also hope that you heard our last episode. I released it yesterday, two episodes in 1 week, because it's a very special week for Pixar. And the interview that we featured on the podcast yesterday was a really great interview by Hunter Phillips, with Pete Docter and Jonas Rivera. So please check that out. He did a really great job with that interview, and I'm really, really pleased to feature it. As I am also pleased to have you listen to our review today of the film. I'm curious to know what you thought of the film. You can write into thepixarpodcast@gmail.com if you agree or disagree with any of the things that we talk about in this review episode today. Also, before I play this, I'd like to point out, as I did yesterday, the blog post that is up. Seeking Your Core Memories. In Inside Out, there is a big emphasis on memories and how core memories can kind of shape who we are and what we believe in and care about. I'm curious to know what those are for you. What experiences have you had? Please think about that and then tell me. Call in our brand new hotline and leave a voice message. That number is 1-385-23-PIXAR. Or it might even be better quality if you just record yourself on like your phone and then email that to thepixarpodcast@gmail.com. I've been really loving the responses that have come in so far about these core memories. So hoping to make something special with these for an upcoming episode of the podcast. Well, that is about it for announcements. I hope that, first of all, you've seen the film already, but if you haven't, go out and see it and then continue this review of Inside Out.
I actually can't hear very well in the mic, like with these headphones, right. Yeah. So it's good.
And it's just a really directional mic.
It is very, yeah, exactly. So, should be good. Okay, well, we are here at the movie theater in Provo, Utah, and I have two very special co-hosts. This is, first, Maddie Forsyth. Hello, Maddie.
Hi.
All right, welcome to the Pixar Podcast. And we also have Davey Morrison Dillard. Hello, Davey.
Hello, Derek.
Well, we should say what we just did. We just watched Inside Out, and now we're going to review it. So that's pretty exciting. So we just saw the insider access thing. So there was like a Fathom event, and there was like a Q&A afterward, and we were just remarking on the personality of the interviewer. That was exciting.
Yeah, it was an interesting choice for the moderator. I liked him a lot. He reminded me of James Lipton on Inside the Actors Studio, but Australian.
He was good. Okay, so guys, let's talk about the movie. I think what I want to do is let's just kind of do a quick non-spoilers plot summary of the film, and then we'll just get quickly into spoilers, because anyone listening to the Pixar podcast is going to see Inside Out already. But let's just do a quick kind of plot synopsis. So Inside Out takes place inside the mind of Riley, an 11-year-old girl who is moving from Minnesota to San Francisco. Her dad seems to have like a startup company or something. Something is happening. And so they're moving to San Francisco, and the emotions are the main characters of the film. Joy being the main character. And Joy is kind of freaking out a little bit because things are not going as joyfully as she anticipated. And so there's also sadness and anger, fear, and disgust. Anything to add for just the basic plot summary?
No, that's pretty much the setup. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So then from that point, they go on an adventure. Okay, so from here on out, anything goes, sort of spoiler. Let me start with you, Maddie. What were your thoughts on Inside Out?
Oh, gosh. It affected me a lot more than I thought it was going to. I like was holding back sobs because I was a little embarrassed.
You said before the screening that you wore some special eye makeup today.
Yeah, Pixar movies always make me cry, so I wore waterproof mascara in preparation for this adventure.
Did that end up being a good choice?
Yes, I think so. Does it look okay?
Yeah, it looks great.
I don't know. It was like kind of healing in a weird way to like see a little girl's mind like working when I've been a little girl and like not knowing how my mind is working. Like I feel like it was very intricate and well thought out and very accurate too. It was cool to like see your mind like panned out in front of you, like things you've never thought about before. And how sadness is a good thing, even though you hate it when it's happening.
Yeah, that's such a good plot line, I think. That's such a good, interesting thing. Anything else? Just your initial first reaction?
Just my heart.
Very good. All right, Davey, what's your reaction to the film?
Yeah, I just really loved it. I thought it was so good. And I thought it was so just really great, because I mean what the movie eventually gets to is like, don't put sadness in a little chalk circle, don't, you know, push it away, because it's important and it's and you need it to get to happiness. And it reminds, as both you know, I often go back to Louis C.K. Yeah. And it reminded me of a thing that he said about how we're so attached to, he was talking about like our attachment to devices and distractions and things like that, and how because we're so afraid of like feeling sad for a second.
Oh yeah.
But we need that sadness to get to a point. He talks about how you feel that and then all the endorphins rush in and meet that. And I loved it because I feel like that's something that really is sort of an epidemic in the world that we live in right now, that we are so afraid of sadness. And I thought it was cool, especially in a kid's movie, because I feel like we're so afraid of that with kids and with kids' media, that I thought it was just really beautiful to see a movie about how we need that and how it's not healthy to push that away, and how owning that and experiencing that is so central to being a person and to to feeling happiness.
Totally, yeah. I really thought, like, in the very first few minutes of the film, so I saw the first hour back at Pixar, so this is the first time that I got to see the whole thing. And when I first was watching it back at Pixar, and Joy was clearly the main character, and she was trying to make everybody happy, I didn't really start to suspect where they were going to go with that, because that is so ingrained, the idea that you should just be happy. And when some, yeah, like, we always are encouraging people, just be happy, it's okay, don't be sad. So I love that this film goes there. And when they when the first hint of that in the film, I think, when Bing Bong is sad and Joy just doesn't know what to do. Like, Joy is totally useless in that scene.
Yeah.
I really love that, like, because it's just, yeah, that's just a really, really cool idea. And I love that they went there.
Yeah. And I think it's cool as a coming-of-age story, too, because, I mean, I don't know if this is a thing that everyone goes through, but I feel like it's certainly something that I went through in growing up, a generally pretty happy-go-lucky kid, and suddenly when you have hard times, it's like, oh, man, how do I deal with this? And I feel like that's why emotions are so intense when you're a kid, is because you don't know yet how to process things. And so I don't know, because I think for me at least that was a big part of like growing up, was learning that feeling sad is okay and feeling sad is good. And so I just thought that was really cool.
Yeah. One thing that I will say is I think that they found really cool ways to visualize these abstract emotional concepts, right? And I think that's one. And by the end of the film, when all of her islands of personality have crumbled and she is like basically having to start over, but that now her new core memories are multicolored, which like is a beautiful visual representation of the idea that when you grow up, nothing is as simple anymore, but the multicolored aspect of life is beautiful. And yeah, I loved that.
Yeah, that's actually one of my favorite parts, is that she like got her new islands, because we've all had that happen. We've all had like our core things that we believe in and like thought about constantly just like collapse and everything like change suddenly. Yeah. And then you have to rebuild it.
Man, that's deep stuff, you guys.
Yeah, going along with that, I really liked how with the color palette and the lighting and the like and the camera movement and everything, the distinction that they drew that was really sort of obvious but not beat you over the head or anything, between the real world with Riley and the stuff going on in her head, the big vibrant colors of her mind and stuff. I just thought it was really smart and really really beautiful. And then, yeah, like you say, the way at the end that those core memories become bittersweet and become multicolored, you know, that, yeah.
Yeah. Or like when her happy core memories turned blue, but they were still happy as you were watching them. That was beautiful because it was a happy sadness.
I just can't believe that concept is so easy. It's so easily in this film. Like, it just fits so naturally in this film. It's not hammered over the head. It's just this simple idea. I think it's one of the most simple concepts that Pixar has done. Like, simple emotional concepts that they've made into this beautiful, elaborate, you know, puzzle. It's really quite remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, it's super, it's really simple, but the execution is crazy. Like, we were talking right before the movie started, I can't remember why, but we were talking about Charlie Kaufman movies, and this reminded me a lot of one, you know,
totally
the crazy, I don't know, just all the lands that they travel through in her mind. It's really smart and funny, and I don't know, just such a good script.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so I want to talk about the different places in her mind that they visualize in this thing, because the outside world is very, or the normal world is very grounded in reality. Like, San Francisco looks so real, and it's just so, yeah, like the colors.
Was that very normal?
Yeah. Very normal, yeah. And then, but the bulk of the movie takes place in this totally invented abstract concept of the mind. And so firstly, they have these the memories that are like little balls, which is interesting. So the memory, the mind is just filled with these little balls of
glass balls with the clinking. I kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
What'd you say, David?
Oh, like little marbles, kind of.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So they have, that's one element. There's a control room where the emotions are there. And when she's a child, it's really just joy that you can only have like one emotion that's dominating everything that you do, and you're driven by one emotion, like, and they can kind of take turns and stuff, but it's really just one. Then by the end of the film, the control center is like, the control panel is bigger, and so all the emotions like have a role. And when she's just playing hockey, like, all of her emotions need to be at play at any given moment. Oh man, am I missing any? What other things did they visualize? All these concepts.
Yeah, what were some of the places, like, they went through the imagination world and where dreams are formed? Yeah, and what were some of the other...
Yeah, dream productions, too.
Dream productions.
Oh, the subconscious was great. That was really cool.
Yeah, just, like, this dark emptiness and scariness. Yeah, scary things happening.
The clown. The clown.
Who's the birthday girl? So scary.
It was.
Oh, you know what? Well, I want to get to this maybe later, but I love that there was no villain in this movie. But yeah.
I kept thinking about that. I was trying to like pinpoint who the villain would be, and then I just kind of gave up.
I know. Well, okay. I want to come back to that. But so, yeah, the different lands, the Dream Production Studios, I thought was so clever and creative. Like, it's like a movie set, you know, and it's
actors.
Yes.
Rainbow Unicorn, I think, is going to be a big, like, meme and come, you know, Friday. It's going to be amazing. but yeah, I just loved all those visual representations. I'm trying to think if there were any others that really stood out to me.
Imaginary friends.
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah.
And the train of thought was a good joke. Yeah.
But all these things really just work to make this central... To illustrate this central idea, the strong emotional core, which is so cool.
And then, like, her memory is just, like, fading.
Yeah.
That was so sad, but that's so real. I don't remember, like, anything from my childhood.
I know, like, what are the memories and, like, characters that have faded away from my mind?
It's kind of scary.
Yeah.
There were the memories that fade, but I also thought it was cool that there were the memories that, like we were talking about earlier, that transform, that go from the happy memory to a happy memory seen through sort of the prism of sadness or bittersweetness. Like, that was really lovely, yeah.
And the memory that just, like, will keep coming back to you, the gum commercial over and over.
Getting it stuck in your head.
I love that. So yeah, so you have the memories that are, like, these kind of anthropomorphized people, and then you have like the other, like these like kind of gumdrop looking people, but that was sort of like the workers, you know. You could have a whole other movie just about like the workers and what they do, because that's a whole world there. I also want to mention about the visuals, I loved how everything in the mind world looked, I don't know, like even the camera in the Dream Production Studios, it didn't look like an actual camera, kind of. It looked very like simple and like cartoonish, yeah. And almost like rounded corners and everything. Did you notice that?
Yeah. I was thinking about how the mind world looked like a cartoon in every element, every design choice, and while the real world, yeah, like we say, was very grounded in reality, and I just thought that was really cool and really effective, and felt really organic, you know, like it didn't feel imposed on it or anything. It didn't feel concept-y. It just felt like it came out of the material.
Totally. They really thought deeply about this, I think.
Yeah. 5 years.
Right, 5 years. Okay, so back to there's not a villain. I love that. It's like my pet favorite thing. It's like my favorite.
Me too.
Yeah.
Like, so movies have to have villains. And even I was going through the Pixar canon and thinking, like, there's always a villain in even Pixar films. I think the closest one to not have one is Finding Nemo. There's not really a villain in Finding Nemo. It's kind of similar to this one. It's characters
being lost.
Yeah,
that's right. Not really a villain though.
There is like Darla, that is like the little girl that's gonna take her home, you know. But she's more of like a ticking time, you know,
right.
Time.
She's a funny villain.
Yeah,
and she's not like diabolical. She just happens to be there and is like, anyway, I.
Who's the villain in WALL-E? It's been a while since I've seen it.
Well, there's that rope.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, Mankind. Well, there's that robot that autopilot.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
Which, yeah. But yeah, the first part of WALL-E, it's just this amazing imaginative thing, and I love the whole film of WALL-E. But I do think that, you know, it kind of gets more conventional at the end of the film.
Sure. Yeah.
But this one, yeah, there's really no villain. So when I saw the first hour and they cut it off, I was. I was terrified. I lost sleep at night, hoping, terrified that that Bing Bong would somehow be a villain.
Well, I thought too. Right when he showed up, I was like, "Oh, he seems a little like weird and kind of skeezy, maybe." Right.
Like he's doing something with memories. He's like, and we can come back to like what you guys think he was doing with that. But so I just was worried that would just be such a conventional thing, right? And you can see it how it would work. Like Bing Bong was, you know, jealous and he was resentful, and so he ends up, you know, just. But no, it's the exact opposite of that. He's not. He just is. We just have to move past him. It's not black and white as good or bad. It's just some things you move on from, and that is a beautiful.
He's so sad.
Yeah, Bing Bong has a great.
He's such a better character because of, like, he's such a great character, and he'd be totally compromised if you made him a villain. And like you say, the sort of the core philosophy of the movie, I think, would be compromised too. That like childhood isn't bad. Like the simplicity of where she's coming from is not bad in any way at all. Like it's beautiful. She's just growing up and becoming more complicated.
Yeah, and growing up is not the villain either.
Right.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah, at the end of the credits, I don't know if you guys saw that, it was like, this is for our children, never grow up, ever.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I love movies about not growing up. They're my favorite. Or books or anything.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, this one is kind of about regrettably growing up, but being okay with it.
Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, Peter Pan is like your favorite story, isn't it, Maddie?
One of my favorite stories, yeah. Like, I love Peter Pan themed things.
Yeah, and this was, I feel like this was super Peter Pan-esque in the complexity of it, because like the book is complicated, the Peter Pan book is complicated in that same way, I think, where it's like, it's not totally, you know, Peter Pan is a little bit of a horror story as well as like a beautiful fantasy story, you know, like it's really complicated and ambivalent about the idea of staying young forever. Like it's beautiful, but it's also, you know, you don't want your growth stunted. But I really liked this movie in that way, because you're right, because it's not about how growing up is bad. It's not about how it's not about how childhood or youth is bad. It's just sort of really embracing this experience.
Like maybe like trying to always be able to understand like what it's like to be a kid even when you're an adult. Like The Little Prince is one of my favorite stories too, and it's a lot like that, like understanding adults and children at all times.
Oh yeah, I love that comparison to other. I mean, the things you guys are comparing it to are like classic children's, you know, stuff. That was very eloquent. Does this come close to some of these? Is this a classic film?
I don't know. When it was over, I was kind of like, I think this might be one of my favorite movies. Yeah. It affected me a lot. And that's kind of what I establish as like being one of my favorites, is how much it affected me.
Cool. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I thought it was. I think it's definitely one of Pixar's strongest movies. I think it's just really beautiful. And yeah, I think that's a good observation that we are comparing it to classic things, because I think it's very much in sort of that tradition of some of the real core things of children's literature and kids' media and stuff, you know. And I love that they're going there and going there sort of wholeheartedly and stuff, you know. Like it's really. It's a movie about emotions, and it's not afraid of like making you feel things, and not in, I don't know, it's not, I never felt emotionally manipulated at all. It was just really moving.
At the end, when the dad was saying that things that he missed about Minnesota too,
yeah.
I suddenly like had all these like memories of my childhood like flash like behind my eyes, like things I haven't thought about in forever.
Yeah.
It was crazy, and it made me so like nostalgic.
Totally.
I loved it.
That part that you were just talking about, Maddie, reminded me of something that I haven't thought about in a long time too. Reminded me of when my dog died, the first dog that we ever had, and it was when I was in high school, and I was going through a really rough time anyway, and it reminded me of I came, so I was at school and my mom came to pick me up from school, and we were giving a friend a ride home, and yeah, like I said, I was really having a hard time in life and really depressed and stuff, and we're giving a friend a ride home from school, and my mom told me before we got in the car, when we were by ourselves, she told me that our dog Hershey had died, and I had to like not cry until we dropped our neighbor kid off, and when I went in to see our dog in her dog house, I just sort of broke down crying, and it was one of the first times, at least in a really long time, that I'd cried in front of my parents, and like I say, we'd been going through a lot of stuff, and my dad started crying, and it was one of the only times that I've seen him cry. He's a really, like, kind, sweet, always there for us person, but he's not like a crier, and that's what that part reminded me of, was just those moments that you share with people when you do allow yourself to feel sadness. And it's so easy not to, like, it's something that I still have a hard time with, because it's so easy to not allow yourself to go there, and it's so easy to distract yourself with other things and put up defenses and shut down, which is something that they do, that they come back to in a lot of different ways in the movie and dramatize in a lot of different ways, is like she's shutting down emotionally in all these ways, and I love that, because I think sadness, probably more than any of those other emotions, is sort of the key to not shutting down, like, you know, because I think it's the one, more than anything else, that we want to push away, because it's the most vulnerable, it's the most scary. But if we allow ourselves to go there, then we don't shut down, and we do experience things, and we do feel things. I just loved that the whole movie, like, all that is built into the structure of the story, you know? Like, it's the, what the movie is saying is, I think, really profound and really beautiful and built into sort of every development of the plot, which is just such good writing and such sincere storytelling, too, you know?
Oh, man, that's so good.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Whew. I also love how, like, because even that memory, like, it's a little bit happy, though, isn't it? Like, you and your dad crying together?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Like, it's one of the lowest points of my life, probably. Like, one of the saddest times I've ever been. But it was also a release of so much sadness. And yeah, and it was one of the times I've felt closest to my parents, I think, you know, because we were able to feel that together.
Yeah, because, like, even at the end of the movie, like, when she's crying and their parents are holding her, she feels a little bit of happiness. And then it becomes a happy-sad mixed memory.
Yeah.
And it rolls down the thing.
Yeah. And, oh, man, the animation is just so beautiful with the human characters, specifically in that scene, you know, like, the way that her face flushes when she's crying and stuff, like, it's just incredible. And it's, I don't know, I feel like it's cool to watch Pixar movies, because you sort of see the evolution of computer animation.
Yeah.
And you just think about a moment like that, and, like, that's not something you could have done in Toy Story, or even come close to in Toy Story.
All the subtle facial expressions.
Yeah, and, like, the moisture in her eyes, and, yeah, the way that her nose and her cheeks get red.
She cries in class. I've cried in class. And it's
the worst.
It's so embarrassing. And you can't control it, and that's what's worse, because you're trying to shove it down, and then it just is coming out more. Oh, I, like, got secondhand embarrassment for her so bad.
Yeah, you were saying something, maybe.
Oh no!
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, just the way that the story has this climax of her finally getting to express her sadness is a beautiful thing, because it's it's totally, it's the plot of the movie that sadness and joy are both, like, gone, and they have to, like, fight their way back. It's just a plot thing, but it's totally relatable that when you go through a, you know, a growing up experience, or when you go through a difficult time, those emotions you do either suppress, they're always suppressing sadness, and then finally, when she's able to take the reins, and she just cries in front of her parents, like, that's a beautiful scene. The image of just the three of them huddled together and, you know, just holding each other and just experiencing this sad moment together. It's the perfect climax of the plot of the film, but it's also so resonant with exactly what happens when you go so long with, you know, suppressing your sadness, and then finally when you let it out, that's the moment when the healing can finally begin, and you're done running away, you're done being angry all the time, you're done, you're angry in the right way, like you're emotionally whole, and when you shove yourself down, you suppress any of your emotions, you can have those bad effects. It's amazing that they accomplished that in a film.
Yeah, and I think that's a great observation, that joy and sadness get lost together, because I think that's true, you know, that when you don't get to feel sadness, I think you can feel a lot of things and a lot of, you know, approaching at least happiness things for sure. But I don't know if you ever totally get to joy without having sadness there, at least as an option. But you do get those more defensive, fear-based emotions, like fear and disgust and anger. Like, those are easy to keep around. But, like, joy and sadness, they get lost together.
I was just thinking about, like, the whole time wondering why they were the ones that were gone. But then, like, I don't know, because, like, I've actually lately kind of shut down, and, like, so it's really cool to come see this movie at this point in my life. Like, the past few weeks, this, like, past week, I finally, like, gave in to my sadness, and so it was really cool. But, like, it makes a lot of sense, because you kind of lose yourself, how she, like, lost all of her islands. You lose yourself when you shut down, and, like, you have to just kind of have a breakdown to get yourself back.
Yes.
And to feel happy again, like, to stop fake laughing.
Yes. Yes. It's amazing. Yeah. Yeah, the stakes in this movie, you guys. Did you feel that craziness? Like, when her islands start falling down, I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, it feels like, because it's resonant, you understand what it sort of signifies, but it's also devastating, and you feel that devastation in the form of this, you know, collapse inside her mind. Any comment on that?
Clenching my fists. Yes. I like audibly gasped and was like, oh no, don't. Like it takes a lot for me to do that in movies.
Yeah, and that's why they don't need a villain, because I mean that's what a villain does, is it gives you kind of conflict. This movie has conflict on its own. It does not need that any more than that. Were you gonna say anything about that?
I don't think so. Just that, yeah, like, it was just everything that they did to sort of externalize and dramatize the stuff that you go through when you're going through an emotional time or a time where you are shutting down, I just think was so, like, smart and so insightful. Because yeah, like you say, we know what that feels like, to feel those central parts of our identity feel like they're going away forever. And, like, and I thought that was cool that at the end, like, that those collapsed and the islands got rebuilt, and they're different, and there's more of them, and they're more complicated now, because that's what happens. Like, you don't get the, like, they are gone forever, you know? It's gone. But, like, it doesn't mean that your life is over. Like, you build stuff over the wreckage, I guess, and, like, and it can be new and better, but certainly different. And I just thought, I don't know, I just love, because I felt like there wasn't sort of a metaphor in the movie that felt off to me, you know? It all felt really accurate and really insightful.
I completely agree with that, and I love that when you think about it, it's a movie that takes place in a totally imagined space. One of the main characters is named Bing Bong, and And you just used the word accurate to describe it, but it's totally true.
Yeah, totally. Like, it's one of the most emotionally, like, honest, real, and, like, detailed movies that I've seen in a really long time, you know? Like, it... Yeah, like they talked about in the Q&A afterwards they didn't go into it too much, but they talked about doing lots of research into psychology and you know, brain science and things like that before making the movie. And I just feel like it shows in the way that it feels like it... Yeah, just really detailed, you know, really specific.
It's like one complete thing. Can we talk about Bing Bong dying?
Yes.
Well, I guess, like, disappearing.
Yeah. Pete's Dragon style, maybe.
I just wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
And when he says, take her to the moon for me, I lost it. It was just so sad.
Richard Kind voiced him. And what else has he been in?
The thing I always associate him with is he's... He is on a TV show. What is it? He's the brother in A Serious Man, the Coen Brothers movie.
Oh, right.
And he's so good in it. Yeah. And so that's what I always think of, because I think that was the first thing that I saw him in where I really, like, took note of him as an actor. Mm. And because he just blew me away with how... just good he is. He's such a good actor.
Well, it really takes. There's a lot in this role that the movie really rides on him in a lot of ways. And I think that the voice performance was good. His design is crazy.
Yeah. I just wanted to, like, touch him, like, put my hands inside of his cotton candy belly.
No, I need a plush doll. I need to go to the Disney store right now. It's closed. I need a plush Bing Bong right now to hug at night and release my sadness.
Oh, no. Yep.
Yeah, no, Bing Bong was great. The other characters and the voices, I thought all of them were well cast. Amy Poehler does a really, really great job being her energetic self. Making Joy a very energetic, positive character, very enthusiastic and just full of energy. But also, like, she needs to take that to the next level and learn something about that. And she can't just be that the whole time. And that's sort of the emotional arc that she goes on to. I think she does a great job with that.
Yeah, she ended up, like, crying at one point.
Yeah.
Which was pretty intense.
Yeah. So,
can we have a movie that's set inside Joy's mind? What?
Yeah. Inception.
Inception.
Layers of Inside Out. Inside Out. What would that look like? It'd probably look like very realistic, like Earth-like. It wouldn't be cartoony at all inside her mind. It'd be live action. What did you say, Matt?
Everything would be coated in butter.
Yes. Glowing butter.
That would be amazing. But yeah, no, oh man. The other voice actors, Lewis Black does a great job as Anger.
Yeah, I just thought all the voice casting was really smart because they cast people who we associate with those things. You know, we think of Lewis Black as a really angry comedian, and Amy Poehler is always being really bubbly. I just thought that, I thought it worked really well because the movie is about going from these sort of superficial ideas about one emotion to something that's more complicated, and I think that helped, you know.
Guys, I didn't even know that emotions could be complex until, like, a few years ago.
Yeah. No, but really, though.
So, it's interesting. I mean, I'm just trying to think, like, if I had seen Inside Out as a kid, like, I would have been so enlightened. Like, I
would have got it as a kid.
Probably not, yeah. And I think there's enough in the film that, as a kid, you would just enjoy it for lots of different reasons.
Yeah, just a good story, you know, like it works as a fun yarn that, like, I have no doubt that kids are gonna love it because it's funny and exciting and moving and things. But yeah, I think, I don't know, like, I'd be curious to talk to, like, I'm curious to talk to my niece who's 8 after she sees this, because I feel like she's old enough that she's, and verbal enough that she's good at articulating her thoughts and experiences. And I'm curious to what degree, Like, I'm just curious what her reaction to this movie will be, you know?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm going to see this again next week with my nephews and nieces. I think I'll bring the microphone and see what I can...
Good. That's a great idea, yeah.
Yeah. Nice. You look like you were going to... No. Okay. Sorry. I always do that. It's the teacher in me. I'm like, oh, are you going to say something? I'm calling on
them. Do you have something to say?
Exactly. No. Okay. Anything else we want to talk about with this film, you guys? Would we recommend it?
Yeah, definitely. I want to see it again right now.
Yeah, I know.
That's really good.
I honestly, I think it might be one of Pixar's best films. Maybe Pixar's best film. It might be. And I don't want to, you know, I mean, that's not a really useful thing to say because who cares? but it certainly has all the elements of that make Pixar films great. It has them in this film. It has insight and heart and story and humor. Can we talk about the humor in this movie? I was laughing a lot. There are some, what were some of your favorite like gags or jokes in the film?
The gag about they're on the train and the two boxes of facts and opinions spill and he just is throwing them in the box. He's like, oh, don't worry, it happens all the time.
They look so similar. That's a good one. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I think the Dream Productions, okay, the scene when Joy is aggressively trying to make it a happy dream and Sadness is trying to make it a scary dream and they're dressing up like the dog and suddenly they're like fighting and so it splits and then the dog in the actual vision you'd like see a dog split in half.
Yeah, which was amazing and dark and I loved it.
So that was hilarious. The abstract thought was, it wasn't just a joke, but it was a really interesting thing, but it was like hilarious to me because it was just so unlike.
Yeah, and the way they played with perspective in that was really fun. Really funny.
When Sadness was like, when Joy was trying to get Sadness to think of something happy, and she's like, remember that movie where the dog died? I thought that was the funniest. I like bark laughed really loud.
Yeah, oh man, I need to see it again to recall all the other funny jokes, because I was just laughing throughout the whole thing. I love that. I feel like the takeaway that I feel from this film is it's a very confident film. And I think that a lot of, I mean, you guys know, you make movies and stuff. Like, filmmaking is hard stuff. It's hard to make a film. And from everything that I can gather, films want to be bad. And it's like, it seems like a filmmaker, I've heard this, it seems like a filmmaker's job is to, like, fight against the bad. And hopefully the thing that results is a good film. Yeah, I think in this case, like, it has such confidence. Like, it knows what it wants to say, and it knows that it has interesting things to do, and it just goes for it and does it. And it does it with confidence, and somehow it managed to be good. Like, this movie, because it's so unconventional in so many ways, it could have been bad so easily. Like, there's so many ways that it could have gone wrong, and it just didn't. It just knew that it had something, and it went with it. And I love that about it.
I think one thing that other movies could learn from animated movies, and specifically Pixar movies, is just the time that they take developing them. You know, like in the Q&A, they talked about how they have 10 movies worth of stuff, and 9 of those movies have to go. And because of the nature of animation, because you have more control over a lot of the elements, and because it's so time-consuming and painstaking, they take so much time, you know, writing the script and developing the script and the story and things like that. And I feel like it really shows. Like, I feel like even the animated movies that aren't as great, you often see, like, sort of a polish and a sophistication, which can be a bad thing, I think, in the stuff that isn't great. I think that can sometimes hurt it and it feels overcooked, but you see that kind of confidence in really hitting the story beats and just really... but I feel like what's great about a movie like this is that it does all that. Like, it tells a really... sort of perfected, like, it's like a diamond, you know, where there, you have this all this pressure coalescing into this thing. You have this really perfected story, but it never feels just like a superficial assembly line product, you know? It feels like it's really coming out of a place that's real and vulnerable and meaningful to the people who made it. Like, it feels the opposite of something corporate, you know? It feels really personal, even though it does feel, like, really polished and presentational in the way Pixar movies do. It feels really personal in the way that, yeah, that the best Pixar movies do as well.
It's so interesting. Like, I think you look at just animated films in general, and a lot of them always have to undercut themselves. There's, you know, and I think that was a big thing that that is the style of, you know, movies like Shrek, which I guess Shrek is a successful movie. It's a good example of this thing that I'm saying I don't really care for that much, of always having to be kind of snarky about stuff, always having to undercut it with, you know, you say something sincere and then instantly you have to, you know...
Yeah, like make a joke out of it.
Yeah, but this movie just... And that's, I guess that's part of what I mean by confidence too, is it's like, you know what, no, like, we are going to be silly and ridiculous at times, but we're not... We're going to trust these things to just be what they are and let it out there and not always have to... And, you know, I think I heard Pete Docter saying this, and he heard it from, I think, Joe Ramp. So some animator was saying that animation is like telling a really interesting joke and then waiting 5 years for the punchline, right. see the response or something like that. It was something, I missed quoting it, but that process, I can see the temptation of why you'd want to, because eventually things, if you're making something for 5 years, it's not always, you're not even going to know. You're in the middle of it, like, you're not even going to know if it's working anymore, and I can see the temptation for, like, you know what, let's just make a joke in there, but this one doesn't. It just is what it is, and it is fully that, and there are so few films that manage to be that authentic and sincere by the time they're finished.
And that's what the movie's about, too, which is cool. Like, it's cool because I feel like the people making this movie exemplify what the movie is about, because, like you say, spending 5 years on this, it's so easy when you've been vulnerable, when you've shared something hard and scary, it's so easy to retreat into the defensive place, you know? And I feel like that's, like, I think that's a really smart observation, because I think that's probably where a lot of that does come from, is that, like, when you say something sincere and then you have to live with it for 5 years, of course you're going to want to, like, make an excuse for it, you know, and make a joke out of it on some level. And they didn't do that, you know. 5 years later, they made all kinds of jokes. It's a really funny movie, but never at the expense of what the movie is saying. It reminded me, maybe because we saw, like, the tour of Pixar Studios before the movie started, and they went into John Lasseter's office with the giant cat bust from Totoro.
Yeah.
But it reminded me a lot of a Miyazaki movie in a lot of ways, partly because of the absence of a villain, and partly because of that, like, willingness to not make excuses for feeling emotion, which I feel like, yeah, almost every animated movie in America wants to do, except Pixar stuff. I feel like they resist that more than any other animation studio, and I think that's why people love them so much, and yeah, I just admire that and love that.
Pete Docter, man. Pete Docter is the real deal. He's the real deal. I mean, when you were comparing it to Miyazaki, I think the last film that I heard a lot of people comparing to Miyazaki was Up, just in this idea of, like, taking a house, and it's an extraordinary experience, but it's very, you know, real emotions and authentic human, the small things, you know, that I think that is what Miyazaki's films are often really emblematic of, you know, just being authentic and small observations about life in the midst of these, like, grand, extraordinary things in it. And yeah, I think that this film does that as well. I mean, Pete Docter, I cannot wait to see what he does next. Like, I'm excited about everything Pixar does, but like, there are certain people that I just can't wait to see what they're going to do next. But you know, Amy Poehler joked today in the Q&A, but like, if she had made Up and Monsters, Inc., then she would have just taken a nap and call it a day. You know, like, Pete Docter could be done at any time, you know, but I...
too. He's so young. Like, how old was he when he directed Monsters, Inc.? Do you know?
I don't know.
So I was wondering what yeah. Yeah.
I know. That. Yeah, right. No, that was 2001 that it came. What would you say?
What have I done with my life? That's what I kept thinking looking at him.
Yeah, no, he's a young guy and... yeah, so he was, I think, supervising animator on Toy Story. He was, like, the second or third, I don't know, he was hired at Pixar back in the early 90s, so he's been there forever. But, and I got to meet him when I went to Pixar, and just the way that he carries himself is so humble, too. Like, he's just such a, I mean, I don't, like, know him or anything, but he's such a sweet, sincere guy, and... It just really, yeah, it comes out in his films.
Yeah, even through that long introduction, like, of all the stuff that he's done, he was so uncomfortable. He's like, squirming.
Exactly. Oh, I can't wait. And, yeah, that's good stuff, guys. Well, any other thing you want to mention? I want to mention the score. I really did like Michael Giacchino's score. I think it's interesting. It's really, like, ethereal. Like, a lot of the sounds in the score are, like... hard to pin down as like notes. They're just like wavy sound effects kind of thing that add to the like sort of ambiance of being this abstract thing. But there's a very clear theme that you can hear throughout the film that is, I think, a beautiful theme. Yeah.
Definitely aided in like making you feel too, which is important for this movie, I think.
Yeah, but not in a manipulative way. Anything else you want to mention about the film?
One thing I thought watching it was just struck me that this could have been a one joke short film, you know, like, sure. This could have been 5 minutes and over, and it's just amazing to me that it never felt remotely like that, you know, like it never felt at all like they were going back to the same well for jokes or for anything. I just thought that was cool, because I feel like it's hard to take something that's sort of this high concept and be continually inventive with it for 90 minutes, but they... And again, in a way that never seems to strike a false note. I think it's amazing. It's crazy.
It's amazing film. Amazing film. I think it's going to do very well. I don't know. So when I saw Frozen, I came out of the theater and I was like, I really liked that movie. I don't think it's going to be very popular, but I really liked it. And it's like, so I clearly have zero barometer of like what I think is actually going to be successful. But what do you guys think? Is this going to strike a chord with people? Is it going to be a big hit? I mean, I think a lot of it. So Minions comes out at some point. I don't know when that's going to come. That'll probably be the next like direct competition. There's nothing really in theaters right now that's a real competition with it, I would say, but do you think it's going to do well?
It's kind of hard to say. I like know groups of people that it's going to do really well with, but then I also know like very specific people in my life that probably will just like not want to let it affect them, and then they'll walk out just kind of like, yeah, that was cute.
Oh, I didn't feel anything. I don't know. Yeah.
And then be angry.
run away back to Minnesota.
Yeah.
That's true. I could say that. I think that it's going to do very well critically. I'm sure it'll get great reviews. And you know, the early buzz is already great. I would love to see, you know, some big awards with this film. I think it'd be awesome. I think it's probably the most deserving of a Pixar film, because I feel like it's so adult. You know, if any Pixar film is going to be, you know, considered in the best picture category or anything, I think this one is it, you know.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you want to say about the film? Do you recommend it?
Yeah, so much. It's so good.
I recommend it too. Maddie, final word?
I definitely recommend it. I'm going to go home and happy cry myself to sleep.
That was a beautiful sentiment to end on. Yeah, happy criers on the... guys, we reached it. This review. Oh, man, this was good. Okay, thank you. Anything you want to plug? Any, like, projects you're working on or anything? Where can people, like, learn more about you or...
Add me on Facebook. No, just kidding. That's weird. No, just Grassroots is all I'm doing right now.
Grassroots Shakespeare Company. Okay, this is an amazing thing. If you're anywhere near Utah, come see these crazy, amazing shows. But yeah, any specific things come in with that?
Julius Caesar, all-female cast, which is a really cool thing. Everyone's spectacular in it. And then Comedy of Errors. It's really, really funny.
Sweet. And this is, I've seen these shows, they're so great. It's Shakespeare in the way that Shakespeare was done. The audience, like, can boo and heckle you guys along. It's so fun to go to your shows.
It's magical.
Yes. Davey, you are also associated with Grassroots.
I am.
But what else are you working on?
I am just finishing up the pilot of a web series called Adam and Eve that will be, which Maddie knows about in a little bit.
I didn't know that you were, like, doing it, though. That's so cool.
I'm excited. And that will, we have a domain name. We don't yet have a website. That'll be, you'll be able to find that at adamandeveseries.com sometime in the next few months, maybe a few weeks. And my personal website is also a domain name that isn't a website yet, which is DaveyMorrisonDillard.com, where one of these days I'll get something up with projects. So,
nice. Well, hopefully people will still be listening to the podcast in the future, and they'll go back and they will see this. I also saw a really cool short film that you did, an animated film too. So listeners of the Pixar Podcast would be interested. The Nose.
Right. Which I was telling you about on the way over here, that there's a longer version with a bunch of actors that we didn't have time to animate. Maddie is one of those actors.
Oh, awesome.
it's a short film called The Nose. It's based on this Russian short story that is really funny about a guy who wakes up and doesn't have a nose, and then he sees that his nose is walking around town as an aristocrat and, like, usurping his role in society. And me and my brother, who's a visual artist and an animator, made this weird thing together, and it'll be online eventually in some form, with some link on my forthcoming website, I'm sure.
Well, I saw the film recently, and I thought it was so cool. I loved it. So it was great to talk to both of you. Thank you so much for coming to the Pixar Podcast and seeing this film with me and having this great... We really opened up... I will say again, we really came to good places in this review. Like, I think that we did it. I think we... In the words of Marc Maron, what'd you say?
Really good emotional levels.
Yes, exactly. Marc Maron is always like, I think we did it, guys. I think we can. That's kind of how I feel right now. So... You marined me. All right, guys. We'll see you next week. Go see Inside Out and tell us what you think.
The thing is, you need to build an ability to just be yourself and not be doing something. That's what the phones are taking away.
Yes.
Is the ability to just sit there like this. That's being a person, right?
Yes.
No one can, you gotta check. Because, underneath everything in your life, there's that thing, that empty, forever empty. You know what I'm talking about? That.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I.
Yes.
Yes,
just
I know
that,
what you're talking
knowledge
about.
That it's all for nothing and you're alone. You know, it's down there. And sometimes when things clear away, you're not watching it, you're in your car, and you start going, oh, no, here it comes, that I am alone, like it starts to visit on you. You know, just the sadness.
Yes.
Life is tremendously sad just by, being in it. And so you're driving, and then you go, that's why we text and drive. I look around, pretty much 100% of people driving are texting.
Yes.
And they're killing, everybody's murdering each other with their cars.
Yes.
But people are willing to risk taking a life and ruining their own because they don't want to be alone for a second.
Thank you for listening to the Pixar Podcast.